the platform. Step up and speak out.
Good evening, the ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Quiraray. It is this edition of The Platform. Thank you very much for joining us. Just to remind you of some of the frequencies you can listen to us on: Victoria Falls 106.5, Kamativi Wange 105.1, Chimanimani 91.3, and Bulawayo, my hometown, 106.7. We're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. If you want to listen to us over the internet, of course, it's www.zfmstereo.co.zw. That's where you can listen to us from. Download the TuneIn app. It's available for free. Just look for us, and then you can listen to us live and in charge. If you want to take part in the conversation, on Twitter is at ZFM Stereo. On Instagram is at ZFM Stereo ZW. And of course, this broadcast is available as a podcast within 24 hours of live broadcast. So, Reserve Bank Governor Dr. John Manguja last week presented the monetary policy statement after several weeks of delay. Some of the highlights from the monetary statement include effective that day, the depositors will be able to move US dollars locally between banks and the depositors will be able to move US dollars locally between banks and under the interbank system. Essential inputs such as fuel and electricity will continue to have forex allocated by the forex allocation committee. Gold producers will keep 55% of their earnings in foreign currency. We've got tobacco and cotton growers will receive 30% of their earnings from crop sales in foreign currency. Tobacco merchants will have 80% of their earnings in foreign currency. All forex holdings will be liquidated within 30 days of the market rate for the day. And also a legal instrument being gazetted that allows for the use of RTGS dollars at all entities, including government and individuals, will recognize the new quote-unquote currency. And in the studio today to talk about the realities around this conversation, I've got the former finance minister, who was also the MDC Alliance deputy national chairperson, as well as MP for Harare East, and also chairs the portfolio committee on finance in the House of Assembly, Honorable Tendai-Biti. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good evening, Larry.
And also with us in the studio today, I've got Professor Ashok Chakravarti, who is an economist. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So the first thing I'm going to ask, as opening remarks, starting off with Professor Chakravarti, how best can you describe the latest currency reforms by the central bank governor?
Well, in my opinion, it's a positive step, because we were in a situation where we had about $11 billion of electronic money, which was tied up, blocked in the deposit accounts of all people. And it was not possible to trade this because a fixed exchange rate of 1-to-1 had been placed by the Reserve Bank between that and the real US dollar. So I think first thing, it's positive that there is recognition that this is not US dollars. I have been saying this for many years, that RTGS money is not US dollars. It's electronic creation as a result of the fiscal deficit which has occurred over the past many years. So the first thing to do was to create tradability between these RTGS dollars and the US dollars, and the monetary policy has done that.
Okay, and your response, Honorable Biti?
Yeah, look, it's a dishonesty not to acknowledge why we are in the problem, why we are in this problem. We're in this problem because someone in his lack of wisdom decided to introduce the bond note in May of 2016, which was legalized in November of 2016. So if someone cuts your nose and then he brings you a painkiller to prevent you from feeling the pain, you don't say this is positive. It's not. The bond note was the problem, because you introduced a fiat currency, you introduced a fictitious currency, you introduced bad money in the context of good money. And Geshem Slow told you that bad money will always displace good money. So the introduction of the bond note was a disaster, because it meant that we were on track towards the de-dollarization of the economy. But I want to move to what John Manguja did last week. And there are two things. The story that he told on Wednesday, the 20th of February 2019. And the story that is in the legal instrument that you have already mentioned, in other words, the legal instrument actualizing the new dollar, the RTGS dollar, in the two different stories which he ought to have disclosed. The first one is the claim that the currency, the bond note, has been floated. That is fictitious. It is not correct, because the one-to-one is still being maintained in the law. So Section 43 of the Reserve Bank Act has not been repealed at all. And I'll revisit this issue earlier. And also, in books, in all books of accounts, you are obliged to still maintain the bond note balances which are on par with the US dollar. So there's not been complete floating of the exchange rate. On the ground, I've just been to four banks, Larry, this morning. I'm just coming from banks right now. There's not a single bank, and I went to the biggest banks in the country. There's not a single bank that is actually trading. The money is not there. The money has not been provided. So it's not actually working. Now I want to come to the law now.
No. Okay. I would like you to get onto that, but I want to ask a question based on what you just said. That to be clear, your position is the correct position would be to float whatever, for the purposes of this discussion, the RTGS dollars. Your belief is that it should have been floated or should be floated.
Don't put words in my mouth.
I'm just asking if that is the position.
Our position is very simple. The bond note needed to be demonetized. It needed to be scratched completely. Then secondly, we needed to strengthen the regime of multiple currencies, or to put it differently, we needed to dollarize the economy, re-dollarize the economy. Thirdly, we needed to protect people's values in the banking system already. So we needed to ring-fence those balances. Fourthly, because the US dollar is overvalued, it's making our exports so expensive. It's making the economy puts cost pressures. We needed to prepare to join the Rand Monetary Union. But this is a process. It requires fiscal discipline. It requires fiscal consolidation. It requires the convergence of our macroeconomic indicators with those of SADC. That's the solution. And the advantage of dollarizing, strengthening the regime of multiple currencies, is that you will eliminate, Larry, one key instrument of fraud in this country, of corruption, which is the ZANU-PF chefs going to the Reserve Bank, assessing the US dollar at a bond price, selling it at a premium, and then retaining that money as bond note, which has not been eliminated at all. So the sole reason why they are keeping this fiction, which is still there in our law books, which is still there in the law of 1:1, which has not gone away, is because there's an elite that is looting US dollars through this fictitious exchange rate.
So, Professor Chakravarti, your position is, okay, this has been fixed. You've been given a position there that says, okay, look, it actually hasn't been fixed because there's still leakages.
And just another point here, before the prof comes in, the black market rate is there today, as I'm talking to you right now. So the black market is actually thriving. The rates are actually firming up, whereas there's nothing that is happening in the banks. There's nothing that is happening in the banks. So what John Panunetsa Mangudla did was actually to add an accelerant in a situation that is already burning. It's terrible economics, it's voodoo economics, it's feja economics, it's casino economics.
Okay, so we're coming to the issue of the black market in a bit, but I wanted to ask, based on a statement that has been said, is a could be seen as a valid statement. If 1:1 is still maintained in parts of the of the legal instruments that we have in the country, doesn't that open up the possibility of corruption? Because a lot of the things that happen in Zimbabwe are down to corruption, and that's been admitted even at the highest offices.
Yeah, well, perhaps in the legal instrument it is still 1:1, but sometimes the law actually takes a little while to catch up with realities of an economy and a market.
But what happens?
As the Honorable Minister of Finance also knows, we dollarized in Zimbabwe in 2008, 2009, well before the legal regime was put in place for the real dollarization. So I'm not too worried about these legal instruments. Of course, he's a lawyer and would give emphasis to that. I'm interested in what's happening in the real market, in the economy. as far as I'm concerned, those laws can be changed. So as far as what I am concerned is that first and foremost, the one-to-one for practical terms, economic terms, has been removed, number one. So the monetary policy clearly indicates that the rate will now float. However, mechanisms have not been put in place for a proper interbank market to allow that floating to happen. So the Honorable BT is correct that nothing is happening. They have started off with some seed money in the banks. But this market is not based on supply from the Reserve Bank at all. That's not the basis for this market, and it can never be. The role of a central bank is not to feed and supply market. The role is really to smooth fluctuations. The money that will come into this market is from private sellers. So let it be known that it's in the statistics well known that we have over $500 to $600 million in the Nostro accounts of exporters. And this is not being released, has not been released because of the one-to-one. Now, as the rate floats to a point where it is remunerative for them, they will start releasing this money because, as you yourself have said, they've got 30 days to acquit it. So I think if we cannot expect a market to respond in one day, that is inevitable. You give it a couple of weeks, and I think that personally, I think that the rate will begin to float upwards. 2.5 is probably a base, and you will begin to see trading, interbank trading between buyers and sellers of foreign exchange.
So the Honorable BT, coming back to you, there have been reports across different newspapers over the past weekend that were up to $5 million dollars in exchange rate already had already been traded. So where would that trading have come from if you're saying the banks have got nothing to trade with?
No. Firstly, it's not correct that there was trading. What is correct is that the central bank said it would release a seed money of $5 million, which is a drop in the ocean. But even that has not been released. There's no trade. There was no trade on Friday, and as I've just told you, I'm coming from four big banks. There's no trading that is taking place. But I just want to destroy a myth being proffered by Chakravart. Economics is about the study of human behavior. Economics is about confidence. Economics is about trust. Economics is about the social contract. Let me assure you, there is no one, there's no right-thinking person who is going to sell his US dollars in order to acquire a fiat currency called the RTGS dollar. Your shareholders will fire you if you are an employee. Your boss will fire you because it doesn't make sense. This is a valueless money. And let me make the point which I wanted to make at the beginning, that there is a gap between what Mankundla said on Wednesday, the 20th, and what is actually in the statutory instrument. So in the statutory instrument, Larry, and for your listeners, it is statutory instrument 33 of 2019. Statutory instrument 33 of 2019. So that's the law. So this law has got two folds. First, the president of the country has enacted what are called the Presidential Powers Temporal Measures Amendment of Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Act, an issue of real-time gross settlement electronic dollars, RTGS dollars regulations 2019. And in these regulations, the president proposed to amend section 44 of the Reserve Bank Act. That on its own is problematic. The president as an individual cannot override an act of parliament made by parliament. In other words, the president is not parliament. So I can assure you that lawyers will challenge him. But I want to come to the economics. The president then says in section 44C, in addition to powers of issuing banknotes given to the bank in terms of 44C of the act, the bank shall have the sole power to issue or cause to be issued electronic currency in Zimbabwe. Electronic currency in Zimbabwe. Then you go to section 44A now. And section 44A says, and this is very critical to Zimbabweans, because this is a fraud, Larry, which we cannot allow. It then says, the Reserve Bank, with effect from the effective date, which is the date that this statutory instrument was made, which is Friday, the 22nd of February, shall issue an electronic currency called the RTGS dollar. So what they're basically saying is that the RTGS dollar, which they floated on, is in fact an electronic currency. Now, there's no definition in this legal instrument of electronic currency. So you have to go and Google the definition of an electronic currency. An electronic currency is virtual currency. An electronic currency is fictitious currency. An electronic currency is currency that is not backed by any value at all. It's like monopoly money if you play a monopoly. So what they've in fact done is not only have they devalued our balances which were in the system, they've now said those things are hot air, they're absolutely nothing. So under those circumstances, which person will sell US dollars in order to buy electronic currency? So it's crazy the kind of things that this regime gets up to. It's
okay, just unbelievable. I've got to ask the question to Professor Chakravarti. You have confidence in this move, correct?
But it's the first step, and we still have a long way to go.
But what would it be backed by?
The market has not still been sorted out, but there are steps being taken. So the first point I just like to make to Honorable is that it is not correct that people are not changing RTGS dollars for what he says, this invaluable US dollars. That is exactly what the parallel market does. The parallel market in millions of dollars is being traded every day. Just a minute. They're trading every day on the parallel market. It's a fact.
On the black markets, yes. Not on the official market.
I'm talking about the black market, but are people changing RTGS dollars to US? Are people changing RTGS dollars for US dollars or not?
Don't back on the false tree.
Listen
carefully to what I
said. Are they trading on a parallel market?
I said no one is going to trade on the so-called official in banks. That's what I said.
To that. They are trading in the parallel market at 3.7. If the rate in the bank is a reasonable rate, they will trade in the bank. To a person, the point is that you're trying to say RTGS dollar has no value. If it is trading on the parallel market, it means that it has value at some rate. That's the point. And if that rate comes into the banking system, which is the purpose of this instrument, then instead of the parallel market, I would rather go to the bank. If I can trade at 3.5 in the bank, I'm very likely to go to the bank than to the fourth street.
People should not be dishonest.
My point is, you must not deny that RTGS dollars has got no value.
But how can I deny? How can I deny that?
You're saying that
parallel market exchange rate exists.
So exactly. So I don't talk about. RTGS has no value. RTGS has got value.
Honorable BT, can I ask? Okay, let's just bring some. Honorable BT, the question that is being asked.
No, I'm calm.
It's okay. Let's bring.
But you're not allowing me to speak.
Let's bring it back.
I'm not singing for my supper. You are singing for your supper.
Let's bring the
phrases.
Let's bring the conversation back.
Professor Chakravarti, you made a statement that RTGS dollars are fictitious monopoly money. If it is trading for real US dollars at some exchange rate, it's not fictitious money.
It is fictitious money, Chakravarti.
Why do people pay 3.7 for it?
You won't allow me to speak.
Yeah, but why do they pay 3.7?
You won't allow me to speak.
Of course, please do. I'm done.
It is fictitious money because
yes.
The bond note 1:1 is still being maintained.
That's not being maintained at all anywhere except in that act that you have shown me. That is.
I've given you
an example. When you were the finance minister, you followed the market. We dollarized this economy before the law changed.
Okay, so we've exhausted this point, but I do want to ask this particular question. You yourself said, and this needs to answering directly, and there is a point that is there to say the banks get to the rate that is on the street, that is 3.7 and things of that nature. Wouldn't somebody feel safer going to deal with banks than what's on the street if it is to be floated in that way?
Yeah, two things, Larry. Who actually is trading on the black market? Because it cannot be an ordinary person in Zimbabwe. But the ordinary person is earning $400. So that means one salary is earning you $100. So it's not the ordinary person. The black market in this country is actually fueled by the state itself. The biggest trader of foreign exchange is the central bank itself. Because they have to finance the quasi fiscal activities, which even in the monetary policy announced last week, they still have to look for fuel, they still have to look for electricity, they still have to look for money for drugs. What they've retained is saying the Foreign Currency Allocation Committee will continue. So as long as we have the central bank doing what it is not supposed to do, namely quasi-fiscal activities, you are going to have a parallel market. It is the central bank itself which is going to purchase that money and push it. But the ordinary average person who earns $500 can't go and trade. So what was needed is you needed to ensure that you eliminate the quasi-fiscal activities of the central bank. We have a central bank that has gone rogue. We've got a central bank that is playing fiscal activities. During my time as finance minister, the central bank did not purchase fuel. The market did it for us. The market did it for Zimbabwe. The market works. Okay. These people will not allow.
They will not allow a situation
where the market flows naturally because they are benefiting from distortions.
But wherever we want to take steps at a time. We're coming to that particular point very soon. The issue that is there remains and maintains. If the rate on the street is say 3.7 and the rate in the bank is 3.7, is at 3.7, does one become fictitious because it's in the bank, or while the same person is still trading on the street?
Let's unpack the political economy of a parallel market. A parallel market is a reflection of the absence of confidence in the formal system. A parallel market is the lack of trust and belief in a system. So no one trusts this system. So that's why that parallel market today is thriving. So you will not find a big player like Zimplus releasing its money. After all, it bar its local expenditure, all its inputs, the chemicals it uses to process, are actually bought from overseas using the same US dollars. So you will not find a big player releasing money into the system when you are buying a fictitious currency. That's not even RTGS money. That's actually an electronic currency according to the law.
Okay, I want to have this conversation a little further. There was something that piqued my interest from what Honorable Biti had to say. Like, what is backing this RTGS dollar? What if we're going to talk about it as an electronic currency, what should give confidence to the person at home? And as far as using is concerned, I'm hoping Professor Chakravarti can help us with that. ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
Just tuned into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Quaid. We are on the platform, and it is a subject that creates a lot of emotion, and it is to do with the monetary policy statement that was issued last week by Reserve Bank Governor Dr. John Mangosuthu, in which he spoke about different things. I think the one that everybody's talking about is the low-hanging fruit that is around the currency itself, but there are also a couple of other things that are in the policy statement that we'd like to talk about. But the issue of this electronic currency they're talking about, by the way, we've been told that from that question and answer from Dr. Mangosuthu, that even the bond coins and bond notes will be treated as RTGS dollars and so forth. For the purpose of me sitting at home, first of all, how is this going to work if there's the issuance of an electronic currency, but there's also still notes that are being used? And number two, what is it backed by? How secure is it?
Okay, so in terms of backing, there is no currency in the world which is backed by anything. Those are the old days in which currency used to be backed with some gold or some reserves or something like that. That's not the case anymore. What backs a currency is, on that I must agree with the Honorable Tendai, which is what backs it is confidence and trust. But there are also certain economic fundamentals which are essential for a currency to maintain stability. And primary amongst them is the fiscal deficit. Okay, so until that point in time when the government was spending without any limit, the printing presses were going at high speed, there was no question of any monetary policy succeeding. But if we look at the government statistics now, since September, there seems to have been some improvement in the fiscal deficit. And indeed, there seems to be some balance between expenditure and revenue. So in a circumstance where you have a balance, a reasonable balance between revenue and expenditure, it means that the government is not pumping money or creating excess demand in the economy. In that kind of situation, if you have the potential to look at monetary policy and see how you can stabilize the value of your currency and also have a formal exchange rate between that currency and the United States dollar. Now, in my opinion, that's all the monetary policy is trying to do. There's some fiscal stability which has come into place in the last 5 to 6 months. And based on that fiscal stability, it was essential that the RTGS dollar, which I have been maintaining for many years now. If you follow any of the things I've been saying for the last couple of years, it is a local currency. You can call it a pseudo currency, a crypto, whatever you want to call it, but it is our local currency. And I've maintained this for many years. The problem with it is that it did not have any value, any real value, because value is created by having a price. And the price of a currency is the exchange rate. Now, that is exactly what this monetary policy attempts to put in place. Now, it is not the role of the central bank to provide 5 million or 2 million or 20 million to the banks to sell. Because that is going back to the same old system of providing money at a certain rate and that going to being allocated to certain preferred customers. The whole idea is that this interbank market should become profitable enough for those people who are holding foreign exchange not to go to the parallel market, but actually to do the same trade, not a different trade. It's not as if it's a different trade in the parallel market that we are proposing, but the same trade should come into the formal market. Now, the reason why we believe that this is likely to be the case, and that's where I differ with Tendai, is that, number one, exporters do have local expenses. If you speak to even the gold mining companies or the platinum companies, quite a significant proportion of their expenses is local. And for that, they do need RTGS dollars. So they will not sit on their US dollar balances because they have to have local expenses. Now, they were not releasing them because it was not viable to release it at one-to-one. Okay, because that would mean that they would be selling their hard-earned US dollars at a loss. But if the interbank market functions properly, which is there's proper trading within the banking system, these monies will be put onto that platform. And mind you, there's, as you have also already noted, there's a 30-day limitation in the holding of foreign exchange receipts. This has always been the case. And in all countries, people are not allowed to hold foreign exchange, developing countries. You can hold it for a certain period of time and then you either have to use it or you offload it onto the market. So all that money is going to be offloaded and onto the market irrespective of what anybody may think. This is the reality. And if you don't believe me, wait 2 to 3 weeks and you will find that a lot of money is actually flooding into this market. I'm confident you can call me in 3 weeks and there will be a significant proportion of this money on the market.
Before I come back to Anubhaviti, the question I have to ask there,
yes.
I'm sitting at home, you tell me about things like fiscal discipline and so forth, all that stuff. I'm in Lotito and Gwanda, Gwabalanda, wherever I am. Mm-hmm. What does it actually mean to me? Because I'm just sitting here and I'm saying, okay, now you're telling me about this, this other currency, which Honorable BT has said that it doesn't have any confidence in it. That's number one. And one of the things that is pointed out, how do you deal with a situation where the confidence that is missing from people will feel that perhaps sometimes the RBZ is also competing for the same dollars because it's saying that it wants to buy fuel, it wants to buy all sorts of things.
Right.
It's also the one that is supposedly keeping an eye on the banks and saying that they should behave. How do you instill confidence in people feeling that way?
Okay, so in the long run, there's no question that we need to go to a fully liberalized market in which there is no such surrender from exporters and the Reserve Bank is having a foreign exchange allocation committee which is then allocating forex for some specific purpose, whatever it may be. That is certainly the long run goal. But there has to be a transition. I don't believe in big banks. I think big banks are problematic. In other countries, they have been problematic. So this is the first step. Just to give you some rough numbers, we have foreign exchange earnings of about $6 billion. And the idea is that on this interbank market, everything which is the not being surrendered by the exporters to the Reserve Bank, you had mentioned, the various percentages. So for instance, a gold miner can keep 55%. They have to surrender 45% to the Reserve Bank. So the idea now is that this 55%, they are free to sell on the interbank market for any rate. The rate will be fixed by the market. That 45% is what is going to go to the Reserve Bank and will be in a pool which the Foreign Exchange Allocation Committee will then allocate for essential uses like fuel, etc., etc., etc. Okay? So there's a division now. At least we have created, we have taken the first step to creating a open, transparent market, which was not there in the past. In the past, everything was being done by the Reserve Bank. It was all being done at one-to-one. Trading was opaque. We didn't know what was happening. We're moving in that direction. So the first step has been taken to create this interbank market for the private sector, for private individuals. And to me, in due course, that part of foreign exchange which is being surrendered also should stop. It should all come onto this market in due course. And fuel and everyone else should buy their money, buy the necessary foreign exchange from this market.
Honorable BT?
I have a problem with the attempt to put lipstick on a monstrous status quo. I have a serious problem with dishonesty. And what Chakravarti is saying is absolute dishonest. Firstly, a currency needs to be backed. A currency needs to be backed. Whilst the world did away with the gold bullion in the 70s, all these credible currencies are backed. They are backed by an economy. They are backed in particular by the capital account. They are backed in particular by the current account. In other words, are you trading? Are you exporting? What is the relationship between your exports and your imports? And the currency at the end of the day is basically a relationship between your exports and your imports. So countries like the United States of America, the reason why it's the de facto international reserve currency of the world is that it is backed by an extremely strong economy that sells everything to the outside world, whether it's iPads, whether it's iPhones, whether it's cars, whether it's rocket stations, and so forth. So the economy backs it up. That their economy backs it up. Now, if you have a situation such as ours, where we have no foreign currency reserves at all, the little $350 million that I left at the IMF in Pennsylvania Street in 2013, the $350 million that I left as SDR, special drawing rights, they ate them. They ate them in December of 2018. That money is not there. So if you have a situation like ours, where we are basically a huge supermarket economy of South Africa, of the Chinese, and where you have the situation like ours, where the ratio of our exports to imports is 1:3, 1:4. In other words, for every dollar that comes in as export earnings, $4 are going out as imports because we are eating that which we are not producing. It means there will be pressure on your currency. There will be pressure on your exchange rate. So it's not a question of the deficit, the budget deficit that he was talking about. It's a question of the current account, the trade relationship. It's also a question of the capital account. How much money are you attracting in the form of diaspora remittances? How much money are you attracting in the form of foreign direct investment? We are not attracting anything in respect of all those things. So there will be pressure. So it leads me to your second question. What backs this currency? There is no economy that is backing it up. They are celebrating, you heard him, they are celebrating the what they are now calling the balancing of the economy, the fiscal consolidation from October, actually, when they introduced the 2% transaction tax and, of course, the fuel levies of the 12th of January 2019. I can assure you, Larry, that the budget deficit this year will be around $3 billion. And there's one thing that they have not factored in, it's the wage bill. What they've done with the currency is that they've effectively devalued wages. So there will be wage pressures. The unions are going to strike. The unions have been on strike across the economy. So this budget surplus or cash surplus that they've enjoyed in the last few months, wait until you factor in the wage increases that are going to come. Also, because they've increased the price of fuel, because they've increased the virtually... because inflation is going up, wait until inflationary pressures eat into their so-called surplus. So in short, the very fact that the bond note or RTGS is not backed by anything. Recall when John Mangundla introduced the bond note in November 2017, he claimed that he had a facility backing it up of $200 million from the African Import and Export Bank. That facility was never availed. Remember when Mthuli Ncube went to Bali in October, 3 or 4 October, for the annual World Bank meetings in Bali, there's a picture he put on Twitter, and I know you're on social media, where he was shaking hands with the Orama, the president of the African Import and Export Bank, saying, I found the African Import and Export Bank is prepared to back all the balances that are in our system. That has not happened. The market out there knows it. The market out there knows that it's fiction. The third myth which he has spoken of is the myth that companies have got local expenses, therefore they will sell. He forgets one thing, that over 50% of that money is already being taken by the central bank involuntarily through the illegal export retention scheme. I call it it's illegal as a constitutional lawyer, because any collections made by anyone on behalf of the state, they have to be accounted to the Consolidated Revenue Fund. So John is taking money without accounting to Parliament.
Okay.
Their expense, let me just finish this point. So they already have a local component in the form of the RRTGS that they're getting as a result of export retention scheme. Why else would they need to sell the extra money? So let's have this conversation 3 weeks and see who is right.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this question, and get in touch with us on Twitter at ZFM Stereo and on Facebook, facebook.com/ZFM Stereo, to take part in the conversation. Economists and industrialists and so forth have come week after week and come in to say, you know, issues such as re-dollarization, which you say would have been something that you'd have gone for in as far as dealing with the currency reforms of this country. It's something that we're trying to avoid because it made us just, as you've admitted, with the cost production pressures that come with it, are excessive. So you had a chicken and egg situation, production against actual, you know, importation. Which one would have gone with first? Because production was already suppressed. And some people are saying because of the fact that we had, say, the dollar currency that was being used as a primary trading system in the country was just too strong for many people to invest in.
Yeah, there's a trade-off, Larry. There's a trade-off. The reason why the dollar system worked during my time was very simple. It was because the real hard sectors of the economy that actually bring real income in this country, they favor the US dollar because it makes exports predictable, exports viable. So Zimplus is happy to use the US dollar because it is selling an international commodity and it will get an international value because the US dollar is international. So the entire mining sector is happy with this. The entire tobacco sector is happy with this. A farmer in Lotito, in Chendambuya, in Karoi will be happy to have his US dollars. And when he has his US dollars, as long as you've got the current exchange rate, he or she is a king, because he'll be able to sell whatever he needs on the black market at great value and finance his costs.
But doesn't exporters that also support his argument?
So exporters will be happy with the continued use of the US dollar. That's why I said, as a long-term thing, we need to make sure that we devalue the US dollar, but not through the adoption of a local currency or fictitious madness, what was done on Friday, what was done on Wednesday, but by joining the Rand Monetary Union as a long-term thing. That's what we need to do.
So would this include, and I want you to come in this discussion, as a long-term, not sure what long-term to you would look like, would that include having to come up with a currency of our own?
Yeah, the first thing, there's an obsession about currency. There's an obsession about currency. Currency, at the end of the day, Larry, is just a means of exchange. We could use, in the olden days, they used to use firewood or goats and so forth. What we have to get right are the economic fundamentals. So it doesn't matter what currency you use. If your fundamentals are not right, you have a problem. And in this country, it is not the currency that has been a problem. The original Zimbabwean dollar, there was nothing wrong with it. Our neighboring countries, whether the Mozambicans, they're using their metkashis. The Tanzanians are using their Tanzanian shillings. The Zambians are using their kwachas. The Tswanas are using their pulas. What has been wrong in this country has been the existence of disequilibrium. the existence of macroeconomic disequilibrium. So that's what we need to sort and sort fundamentally. If we don't do that, we'll go through the Zim dollar as we did. We'll go through the bearer check as we did. We'll go through the US dollar as we did. In fact, we are the first country in the world that has bastardized the US dollar. If you go into a market, people are selling in US dollar terms 3-4 times international prices. We will bastardize the rand as we have done. Now we are going to bastardize this creature. I don't know who gives a name like RTGS the dollar. It's crazy. So we need to get fundamentals right. Once we get fundamentals right, South Africa will accept us. Anyone will accept us if we get the fundamentals right. The fundamentals are not right in this economy. Not only that, Larry, there's also corruption. The reason why they are maintaining this fictitious madness is because people are benefiting from the arbitrage. The US dollar has been commodified. So there are people, those that are able to access it at a cheap rate, not you and me, they're benefiting. So all these distortions are being maintained because some fat people are lining up their fat pockets.
Okay, let's say, just quickly respond, Prof.
Well, I couldn't agree with Tendai more that you have to get the macroeconomic fundamentals right. But how do you get the fundamentals right? You've got to have the right policies. Now, two of the key policies to get macroeconomic fundamentals right is the fiscal policy, and he will no doubt agree that the fiscal gap, balancing the budget, is key to do that. He may not agree that it's being balanced, but that is central. That is getting the structural equilibriums. The second part of the story is getting the foreign currency, the exchange rate, and the external sector. Now, he has talked about balance between exports and imports. You can't possibly have balance between exports and imports if your exchange rate is 1-to-1 with the US dollar, because that encourages people to import excessively. One of the reasons for our balance of payments deficit is precisely that it's easy to import because we were allowing importers to get their money at 1-to-1. On the other hand, if officially they get their money at 3 or 3.5 or 4-to-1, imports will come down significantly. That is the reason why the entire industrial sector, all the business associations, who have nothing to do with me, you know, and they are not politicians, they are all people who have welcomed it. They are not actually trying to toe a line or sing for their supper. They are looking at their own sectors and what is beneficial to their own industries and their own sectors of the economy. And unequivocally, they have come across and stated that they are in favor of this idea of having an interbank market which gives a true value to the RTGS currency, which allows it to float, which controls imports through a higher exchange rate and provides protection to the economy. So in my opinion, this is the right way to go.
But is the argument that linear, for example, if the argument has always been, for example, that the reason why the black market was going up is because the local manufacturer had input costs from other countries, and therefore they were accessing money on the parallel market.
Yes, indeed.
So, will it make a difference that you're now getting it at 3.5 as opposed to 1.1 if you were always going to import anyway?
No, the difference was that they were forced to access it from the parallel market because a law had been put in place indicating that if you either have to get it from the Reserve Bank at 1-to-1, or else if you go to the parallel market, you can go for, and if you're caught, you can be put in jail for 10 years. So what was happening is that there were some sectors of the economy or some people or some industries which were accessing foreign exchange carefully or cautiously on the parallel market, but the majority of them were reducing production, reducing capacity utilization, and many of them closing down, like Delta, for instance. Now, Delta doesn't need to do this at all. If they want foreign exchange, when this market begins to function properly, and it's not yet beginning to function properly, I don't think you can make a judgment in one day. As I said, give it 2 to 3 weeks or a month, and then I'm happy to have a reassessment. Delta will be able to go back to this market, bid for their foreign exchange, which they will be able to buy from exporters who have been selling on the parallel market and who will not sell on the parallel market rate, because they will more or less be able to get the same rate through the interbank system. So in that sense, it is superior to the existing situation.
But then the key argument will be, you're mentioning, for example, and people are not freely talking about this black market, which used to be talked about in hush terms now. How about situations where somebody gets worried that, okay, I'm going to have a big stick that says if you're on the black market, it's still that law that says you're going to be in prison for 10 years still hangs over your head.
Right.
As opposed to someone who's got who goes through the rigorous process of setting up a bureau de change, mm-hmm. and things of that nature, who doesn't have those threats over their heads, mm-hmm. doesn't that still create that problem, especially given that one of the big pressures that's going to be there is that maybe there are some people who are beginning to earn their part of their salaries in US dollars, who, you know, their incomes are being eroded and things of that nature, sure. because of this, of the system that is in there. How do you deal with something of that nature in as far as those fundamentals that you're talking about in, that bring confidence within the formal system?
Confidence is a matter of the market functioning and the government providing the right environment for the market to function. It takes time. We have had years and years and years of mismanagement, so it can't be corrected in one day. But policy initiatives are now being taken for the first time, in my view, since the end of the GNU, which are in the right direction, and I think we need to support it. I don't think this is useful being a naysayer and saying that it's all going to fail. I don't think so. I think that as an independent economist, and I don't sing for my supper, I do not belong to any political party, so I have no agenda whatsoever, either for ZANU-PF or MDC or anybody else. I speak for myself as a professional economist, so I just want to clarify that to my comrade over here. On the other hand, he has a very distinct political agenda. So, but that being said, the point is that as an economist, we are now beginning to follow more rational economic policies. And I think that this needs to be recognized, and the results will come through very soon. We will see in a couple of months. You can call me again and we'll see whether things have improved or they've gone the direction of what the Honorable Tendai Biti is saying.
We're going to take a quick break and come back for the last 10 minutes of the discussion. Get in touch with us on Twitter at ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
You're still tuned into the platform with me, Larry Kwederai, and listen to us if you're in Gweru on 104.3, Kariba 105.3, Manshingo 96.1, Bulawayo, my hometown, 106.7, and we're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. And in the studio, we are talking about this monetary policy statement that came out. And one of the things we've been glossing over and, you know, just passing by is the issue of the export retention system, in which I want to ask first of all, I think you've made your position clear about the export retention system.
Yeah, but can I just respond to what you're saying, also in the context of that?
Just in case not everybody necessarily knows your voice, Honorable Biti.
Okay, thank you, Larry. Yeah, so, you know, if John on the 20th of February had said, we are now removing the official exchange rate, we are now repealing Section 43 and Section 44 of the Reserve Bank Act, the one that creates that official exchange rate. And then secondly, if he had said, I'm also, as Reserve Bank Governor, removing export surrender requirements, this thing could actually work, because you have liberalized both the supply side and the demand side. The source of foreign currency in this country are huge exporters such as the mining houses and, of course, the tobacco farmers. In a few weeks, the tobacco farming season will start. But he has not liberalized the export retention scheme. He is still taking people's money, and in my view as a constitutional lawyer, illegally, is for reasons that I've explained. So he's taking that money. So these people are going to be left in some cases 20%, in some cases 30%, depending on what industry you are in, depending on what sector of the economy you are in. That means that these companies will hold on to the 20% or the 30% that has been left for them by the illegal export arrangement. The other thing which is very mendacious, Larry, whilst the monetary policy is clear that of the foreign currency that remains with you, that you don't use within 30 days, we will buy at the open exchange rate on that day. So if it's 1-4, it will be bought at 1-4. The monetary policy is very quiet, and this is very deliberate, on the exchange rate that is going to be used to actually take the foreign currency at retention. The 55% for gold miners, the 30% for tobacco farmers. And the reason why it has been kept is the only reason why it can make sense for them if they're going to take it at that official exchange rate of 1:1, which is still part of Zimbabwean law. 1:1 is still part of Zimbabwean law. So this thing will not work because no rational person will surrender his money after he's left with only 20% when the rest of his business depends on foreign currency. If we were in the right direction, and I submit we are not, and this is not political, there should have been a liberalization of the supply side, i.e. remove export surrender requirements. Number two, a liberalized demand side. But if you are going to do that, Larry, then it means that you don't need the thing, the animal, the monster, the goblin called the bond note, which is our case. Demonetize the bond note, strengthen the regime of multiple currencies, ring fence people's balances, remove export surrender requirements, prepare to join the Rand Monetary Union. That's the correct thing to do.
But isn't that easy to join the Rand Monetary Union?
Firstly, Larry, the lesson we have learned, particularly from the European Union, is that it's not sufficient to have monetary union convergence. You also need to have fiscal convergence. The pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece and Spain have taught the European Union that. So it would be right for the South Africans and the Rand Monetary Union to insist that Zimbabwe is health, to insist that our debt levels are sustainable, the net present value of our exports to GDP makes sense. So that's why it's to me, I said it's a long-term thing, defined to me 3 to 4 years. And we need that discipline because the key issue, the key disease in this economy is lack of fiscal discipline. Hence, runaway budgets that are in excess of 15%, 20% of GDP. Hence, a domestic debt that is, for the first time in the history of mankind, now exceeds external sovereign debt.
0731 168 045 is our WhatsApp number. Do get in touch on Twitter at ZFM Stereo. Professor Chakravarti, your response to that, the issue of the export retention. Some are arguing out there that, for example, we don't trust the market to give us fair price, so we won't be necessarily be able to buy some of these goods and services that are vital. Is that something that you subscribe to?
No, I don't subscribe to that at all. I don't agree with Tendai on the issue of fiscal discipline. He is right that the government was grossly indisciplined to date. But it's not only the 2% tax that has added to the fiscus. In addition to that, there is also the excise duty on fuel, which is over $2 per litre. And in addition to that, the market daily exchange rate is very likely to be used. In fact, it probably is and should be used for the valuation of customs duties and all taxes on imports. So in fact, in my opinion, the revenue side of the equation of the government of Zimbabwe is going to expand very significantly in the next few months. And it is my belief that it will be more than adequate to give perhaps at least a 50 to 60% increase to all salary earners. So I don't think that the fiscal balance will be broken at all going forward. Probably we are going to end the year with balance or perhaps a small deficit. So I think the numbers, I'm quite happy to sit with him to have a more solid economic discussion on what the actual numbers are to show that it's likely that we are going to have a fiscal balance. On the other side, I agree with him completely that the ideal solution is to liberalize the foreign exchange market completely. There should be no surrender requirements. There should be one big pool of supply, and that would be the right way to go. I've been recommending that for a very long time as well. But I'm quite happy to take a more step-by-step approach. After all, we are in a situation where economic policy was poor economic policy, and therefore even if we take a small step in the right direction, I think it should be supported. And that's the reason why I have come forward as an independent person to support it. I think that if the liberalized foreign exchange interbank market which has been created works, and I suspect it will work, and I think in the next month or so we will know how that is going to perform. If that works, then there is no reason why we should not start encroaching on the surrender requirements, and the fact that there is no reason whatsoever for the Reserve Bank to be involved in the allocation of foreign exchange whatsoever. The entire amount should be put on the market and let it be done in a transparent and accountable manner. So I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
It's a question of timing, though, I think.
Okay. I think we can talk about this until the cows come home, because there's so many things that we could unpack today. But final words, Honorable Biti?
Yeah, it's about politics, Larry. Everything we're talking about is about politics. So as long as you have got politics, as long as there are challenges around legitimacy and contested elections, as long as you have got a confidence deficit, as long as you have got a broken down social contract, as long as you have got a trust deficit, and as long as you have got the political divisions, the hatred, the polarization that exists in this country, economics don't work. And so whatever is in Mutuvi's head, whatever is in Mangunjika's head, it will not work, because the real issue is we have to resolve the political challenge.
And your final words, Professor Chakravarti?
Well, I can't disagree with what Tendai said about that, but I don't think that any country or any population or any policymaker or even in the opposition can just sit back and say that until these issues are resolved, we are going to go to kingdom come. That's a very negative attitude, and I do not subscribe to that. I think that however difficult the situation may be in any country or in any society, one must make an effort to move in the right direction. And if there are any small steps which are being taken in the right direction, they should be lauded and they should be supported.
Yes, that's the voice of Professor Ashok Chakravarti, who's an economist. And before him, Honorable Tendai Biti, who's a former finance minister and is currently the MDC Alliance Deputy National Chairperson, as well as the MP for Harare East, and sits as the chairperson for the Portfolio Committee in the House of Assembly. The Portfolio Committee on Finance, to be specific. My name is Larry Kwedadai. I'm back with you tomorrow. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. And as I say, from where I come from, I see you. Siyasebenza. Take care of yourself.